This is the Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com. You can call us at 440-579-2531. Send us an email at studio@sportstalknetwork.com or follow us on Twitter at SportsTalkNet. The Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com starts now.
Hello again, everybody. This is Steve Callis on The Steve Callis Show. It's Friday, November 16th, 2012. I encourage you to send your emails to studio at sportstalknetwork.com. That's S-T-U-D-I-O at sportstalknetwork.com. We got a lot to do today. We'll get to some interesting NBA games last night, an NFL football game that just helped the Patriots more than anybody else. We'll get to that. But first, we're going to start off the field. Probably the most talked about MVP race in many years, the American League MVP. Would it go to Miguel Cabrera, the Triple Crown winner? Would it go to Mike Trout, the stunning rookie who put up incredible numbers and sabermetric numbers, certainly better than Cabrera if you're a sabermetric guy? But at the end of the day, it wasn't even that close. Miguel Cabrera gets 22 of the 28 first-place votes. Mike Trout gets the other six. Cabrera gets 6 second-place votes. Obviously, the ones who went to Trout voted Cabrera second. Trout got 21 of the 22 remaining second-place votes. Adrian Beltre snuck in there for 1 second-place vote. So not even as close as many thought it would be. Cabrera, 362 points. Trout, 281. But again, based on, 10 points for first, Cabrera easily won the award. 22-6 in first place votes. Now, you're already seeing the battle back and forth. What happened to Carl? I think it was last year when Felix Hernandez won, with like a 13-12 record, won the Cy Young. But I think there's a big difference here. AL MVP, V, valuable, not AL MOP, O, outstanding. If you had to pick the most outstanding player, the best player, you very well could have given it to Trout, but this is the most valuable player. Trout's team finished third in their division. Cabrera's team made the playoffs. That has to count for something. Now, again, people will say, well, the Angels won one more game than the Tigers, and that's a valid point. But the reality of all of that is Cabrera was on a winner. It wasn't even so much to me about the Triple Crown. Trout was the best all-around player in baseball. He wins games with his glove. He stole 49 bases, but Miguel Cabrera, to me, was the most valuable player because what Trout did, he did for a team that didn't make the playoffs, in fact, finished third in their division. Now, that's a little weaker than it used to be in the old days before 69 when you had only one team. Generally, not always, generally, you'd look for the best player on that team to be the MVP. Didn't always work out like that, but usually it did. Then even when they went to two divisions, you essentially had two teams. Now it's totally different, as you know, because you have multiple divisions, you have wild cards, multiple wild cards now. So I think the writers got it right. A lot of the old-timers, for lack of a better term, are gonna be crucified by the sabermetrics guys. But again, you have to distinguish between MVP and MOP, and I think really that's the difference. It's not a Cabrera-Trout thing. And I don't know how you count this as well, but Cabrera moved from first base to third base, and he wasn't, he was, I thought, better than average at third base. He's not Mike Trout defensively, but better than average at third base. And don't forget, by moving his position, he allowed Prince Fielder to come to the Tigers and play first. I don't know that that should be in an MVP categorization or not, but if you're going to start, using other statistics, I still think it goes to the best player on a team that made the playoffs. If none of these teams that made the playoffs had really good years, then maybe you could give it to a guy like Trout. I don't agree when they gave it to Ernie Banks back in the late 50s when he was on a second division team, or Andre Dawson when he came in last, or A-Rod when he was on a terrible Texas Rangers team. By definition, to me, you can't be the most valuable player if your team's coming in last or next to last. But this is a fascinating discussion that's not going to die. But certainly, if the award was AL MOP, most outstanding player, then I think it should have gone to Mike Trout. But Cabrera gets it. He wins the Triple Crown. Again, a stunning accomplishment. Nobody's won it since Yastrzemski in 67. I mean, that's 45 years. So that's a stunning accomplishment. But yes, Trout's the better all-around player. He went 326, 30 home runs, 83 RBIs. Cabrera was 330, 44, 139. Excuse me, 139 RBIs. The WAR, the wins above replacement, Trout easily outdistanced Cabrera 10.7 to 6.9. And as we said, he wins games with his gloves, he wins games with his legs, and he is the best player. He's the best all-around baseball player in the American League, period. But that's not what the award is for. So Cabrera gets it. Trout finishes second. I think that's the way it should have gone. In the National League, not really a conversation. Certainly nowhere near the controversy that was in the American League. Buster Posey, who is not only the comeback player of the year, he's now the MVP. He gets 27 of the 32 first-place votes. He runs away with the award over Ryan Braun, and deservedly so. They're really, you know, I thought Andrew McCutchen early had a chance when the Pirates were really relevant. But, of course, the Pirates fell off. McCutchen fell off a little. He actually finished third. It was Posey, Ryan Braun, Andrew McCutchen. Yadier Molina actually got two first-place votes, and that's an interesting vote. Not out of the realm of, that's not lunacy, because Molina, an unbelievable defensive catcher who just shuts down running games by showing up, also had a great offensive year, and good for him. But Posey was the easy winner, and deservedly so. His team made the playoffs. Obviously, the voting is done before the playoffs, so nobody knew that Posey and the Giants were winning the World Series and Cabrera and the Tigers were making it to the World Series. But Posey, the comeback player of the year, he wins the batting title, batting 336. He's the first catcher since Johnny Bench in 1972 to win the MVP. He's now won two World Series in his 3 years, and he missed most of last year, the 1 year he didn't win the World Series. You know, he won the Silver Slugger. He's now the MVP. Guy's had a magical career only 3 years. And again, he came off a horrific injury. You'll recall that crash at home plate that knocked him out for the season. I think he played like 40 games or something last year. But he obviously recovered totally from that, hit 336, won the batting title, led the Giants to the playoffs, led the Giants to the World Series. So Buster Posey definitely deserved the NL MVP. I don't think it's a debate in the AL MVP, but I understand what the debate is. But again, to me, that's a mistaken MVP versus MOP. So we'll leave baseball for now. I did want to mention R.A. Dickey winning the Cy Young. I thought it was fantastic. I thought David Price deserved it in the AL as well because he pitches in the AL East. But Dickey, for a horrible team, knuckleballer, has never won. I think one of the Negro brothers came in second once, but a knuckleballer has never won the Cy Young, and now that's changed thanks to R.A. Dickey. Look, a humble guy, although he did come on the radio in New York and essentially said there's not really going to be a hometown discount. Keep in mind, Dickey's a guy who's never made a lot of money. This is going to be his big hit now, and he's 37 years old. So congratulations to them as well. But let's get to a few other things now. We'll go to the football game because there only was one yesterday. The Dolphins at the Bills. To me, if the Dolphins could have won this game, that would have been of some meaning in the standings. But the Bills at home don't score an offensive touchdown, do get four field goals. They beat the Dolphins at home. Bills 19, Dolphins 14. frankly, kind of a ho-hum game. The reason it's virtually meaningless now is because with the victory, the Bills moved to 4-6. With the loss, the Dolphins also moved to 4-6. But, it just strengthens the Patriots. You now have three teams in the AFC East with six losses, and the Patriots are 6-3. And as I said, the Patriots still have a relatively easy schedule the next three games. They have a couple of tough games later on. You know, Indianapolis is good, and they're on a four-game winning streak, but they haven't really beaten anybody good. You know, the notion that the Patriots and the Colts at 6-3 are similar is ridiculous. Plus, they're playing in New England. So, you know, will Andrew Luck score some points against that Patriots secondary? Probably, but Tom Brady is Tom Brady is Tom Brady. They did give up 31 to the Bills last week at home. The Patriots did, but they also scored 37. So the Patriots 6-3 in total command, three game advantage in the loss column to all three teams. Again, it's hard to believe that they're even going to lose six games the whole season. They have six games left. They have seven games left, but it's unlikely that they're going to lose three of those seven. Maybe two, I think, but unlikely that they're going to lose three. So they might have, in essence, already won that division. Yesterday, statistically, Fitzpatrick 17 for 27 for 168, no touchdowns, no interceptions. Tannehill only 14 for 28, 141, one touchdown and two picks. C.J. Spiller, really the offensive star for the Bills, 22 rushes for 91 yards and catching three passes for 39 yards. Out of the backfield, Johnson, six receptions for 79 yards for the Bills. But again, they did not score an offensive touchdown. Virtually no running game for the Dolphins. Reggie Bush, 10 rushes for 20 yards. Thomas, 12 for 33. Only one offensive touchdown, and that was scored by Miami. But Bills 19, Dolphins 14. Really a play of note very late in the game. Well, I shouldn't say that. Leotis McKelvin runs back a punt 79 yards for a touchdown to give the Bills the early lead. That's the only touchdown they scored, plus four field goals. Marcus Thigpen, 96-yard kickoff return for the Dolphins. Tannehill to Devon Best late to make it 19-14. And then down the stretch, Tannehill and the Dolphins actually had the ball, were across midfield. Obviously, they score a touchdown, they win, but Brian Scott of the Bills picked off a Tannehill pass with 45 seconds left to seal the deal. Bills 19, Dolphins 14, Bills 4-6, Dolphins 4-6. I want to get to a few other NFL notes. You know, the news in New York, if you follow the soap opera, I guess, that is the New York Jets, Woody Johnson, the owner of the Jets, speaking yesterday. You know, a lot of people have accused him of bringing in Tebow as an owner's decision, not a football decision, because he wants to sell PSLs, those personal seat licenses. I don't think they're everywhere, but they're certainly in New York, Jets and Giants, roundly criticized. You know, the commissioner, Roger Goodell, says the PSLs are a good investment. You know, everybody laughs at him, but I guess that's the stance he has to take. But yesterday, Woody Johnson, being interviewed, essentially said, look, I'm here to win games. I didn't bring in Tebow to sell PSLs. I didn't bring in Tebow to sell hot dogs. I'm here to win games, and we thought that was a good football move. But again, when you see how they used Tim Tebow, you almost feel bad for the guy, mocked by his teammates. He hasn't had a chance. I don't know if he'd be better than Sanchez or not. It's like everybody forgets what he did in Denver last year. It was like he did that in college or something. But he brought them back four or five times late. He beat the Steelers in a playoff game. I mean, that was a miracle. He threw that, you know, it was a short pass, but he threw that pass to Demaryius Thomas that won the game in overtime. I think it was like a 77-yard touchdown. It was really a 10-yard crossing route, but you have to give Tebow credit for that. But it doesn't look like he's going to get a chance. Everybody says Mark Sanchez gives them the best chance to win, and if Mark Sanchez gives them the best chance to win, well, they have some issues. Few other things going on in the NFL. Michael Vick out with a concussion. Nick Foles will start for the Eagles. Now, he was unbelievable in the preseason. Nobody ever thought this was going to happen, but he's going to get his chance to start. You know, it could be the end of the line for Vic and Andy Reid in Philadelphia, but Foles will start Sunday for the Eagles. 49ers head coach Jim Harbaugh went into the hospital for a minor procedure for an irregular heartbeat, but he was back at practice on Thursday. Looks like he's going to have his quarterback, Alex Smith, for that big Monday nighter, 49ers and Bears. Unclear yet whether Cutler is going to play. He has not practiced this week after taking that vicious hit last week and leaving with concussion-like symptoms. Smith also left with concussion-like symptoms, but it looks like Smith is farther along in the recovery than either Michael Vick or Jay Cutler. That's a big game, obviously. Monday night, 49ers and Bears. Another big game, as you know, Ravens at the Steelers. But the Steelers definitely don't have Big Ben this week, and that gives the Ravens a huge leg up. In fact, the Ravens play the Steelers two of the next 3 weeks, and they're a game up on the Steelers, so it's not looking very good for the Steelers as well. No Big Ben. Although they are playing at home, maybe they can eke one out. Byron Leftwich will be the quarterback. This is the Steve Callis Show. We're at SportsTalkNetwork.com.
every day. Nearly 3,000 families enter into foreclosure and face losing their home. If you're currently behind on your mortgage, you can still avoid foreclosure. You can save your home, but you need to act now. We're Allied State Foreclosure Services. We're experts in saving homes from foreclosure. With just one phone call to us, you can stop the foreclosure process, lower your monthly mortgage payments, and save your home. Call now. The call is free with no obligation. 1-800-603-8308. Call us if you've been threatened with foreclosure, denied loan modification, or missed a payment on your mortgage. If you've been a victim of a predatory loan or are upside down on your mortgage, even if you've lost your job and you're worried about losing your home, don't wait. Call us now and let us help you save your home. You've worked hard to build a life with your family. Let us help you keep your home. Call now before it's too late. 1-800-603-8308. 1-800-603-8308. 1-800-603-8308.
With nearly 30 years of experience in the electrical surplus and distribution business, Supply Line Electric has now taken its business onto the internet with a completely automated website for inventory control and order entry. Specializing in Square D, Eaton Cutler Hammer, Siemens Automation, Banner Engineering, ASCO Valves, Bussmann and Faraz Fuses, and coming very soon are more than 5,000 line items of Allen Bradley. SupplyLineElectric.com, your 24/7 distributor of electrical, motor control, and automation parts.
Follow your favorite NFL team all season long on SportsTalkNetwork.com. Team news, injury updates, game previews, and recaps are updated 24/7. SportsTalkNetwork.com. Your teams, your city, your passion.
Good news, everyone. Lumber Liquidators wants to send you a free catalog of hardwood flooring options. Call 800-421-1346. See how you can buy the highest quality flooring for the lowest possible prices. Here's what some of our customers have to say.
I've installed a lot of hardwood floors, but this is the best bang for the buck.
Call in the next 10 minutes to get your free catalog.
I love Lumber Liquidators. I got quality products for less, and the online ordering was easy.
At Lumber Liquidators, we buy direct from the mills, and we pass the savings on to you. Call right now and get the floor guide and catalog absolutely free. It has hundreds of top quality flooring such as solid hardwoods, laminates, bamboos, and even Bellawood pre-finished flooring with a transferable 100-year warranty. Our catalog is full of tips, ideas, and our flooring project list to help you find the right floor for you. Call 800-421-1346 and get your free catalog. 800-421-1346. That's 800-421-1346.
Blue Zoo Radio with Frank Reese, Sunday nights at 8 p.m. only on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Welcome back to the Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Yeah, we're back on the Steve Callis Show. Only three games in the NBA last night, but all to me were fascinating games. Of course, the Knicks on the road at San Antonio, the only remaining undefeated team. Knicks were 5-0. Prior to the game, San Antonio was 7-1. The Knicks haven't won in San Antonio in like 9 years or something. But amazingly, despite getting down 12 in the fourth quarter, the Knicks come back and beat the Spurs on the road. Knicks 104, San Antonio 100. Yes, it's early, but the Knicks are 6-0. They're the only undefeated team. In fact, the only other team that has even just one loss after San Antonio gets their second yesterday is Memphis. And it'll be an interesting test tonight because the Knicks are going down to Memphis, you know, back-to-back. Well, from San Antonio over to Memphis, I should say. Knicks back-to-back, not a young team, as you know. That's a lot of the criticism, but so far so good. Jason Kidd has been very good. You know, they're going Kidd and Felton in the backcourt, so you have two guys who can handle the ball. But the Knicks are a good team defensively. They showed a lot of grit coming back last night, and they do beat the Spurs. Knicks 104, Spurs 100. Popovich seemed very angry down the stretch in that game. The Spurs had a specific plan to take Carmelo Anthony out of the game, and they did. Carmelo shoots 3 for 12. He only has 9 points. He does have 12 rebounds, so he's doing other things to help the team. But yesterday, Raymond Felton, 25 points, 7 assists. Jason Kidd hit 4 threes, 14 points, including two big ones down the stretch. J.R. Smith has been unbelievable off the bench, and he hit what proved to be the game winner, a huge three that gave them the lead from down one to up two. Smith off the bench had 17 points, five rebounds. Chandler, the defensive player of the year, 13 points, 11 rebounds. To me, he's pretty much the key to what the Knicks are, but they've got a nice squad. This is without Amari Stoudemire. You know, and when you hear people on SportsCenter or somewhere say, oh, and they're doing all this without Amari Stoudemire, remember this, the Knicks might be a better team without Amari Stoudemire. If they try and bring him back and put him at the four and move Anthony to the three, Anthony's much better at the four. No four can guard him. If they put him back at the three, the Knicks might be a worse team. If you'll recall last year when they played together, it didn't go so well. So be wary when you hear, oh, they're doing it all without Amari, as if when they get Amari back, they're going to be a better team. To me, the only way that's true is if Stoudemire comes back off the bench, plays his 20 minutes. Whenever Anthony sits, Stoudemire plays the four. If he's going to play the four when Anthony's playing, then Anthony will not be as productive at the three. So we'll see what happens. But yesterday, Knicks 104. Spurs 100. Tony Parker, 19 points, 12 assists, 6 rebounds. Duncan, 6 for 10 from the floor, 14 points, 14 rebounds. Ginobili off the bench with 12. Steven Jackson, 10 points, 11 rebounds, and good defense on Carmelo, but not enough. Knicks 104, Spurs 100. Again, a gigantic win for the Knicks. The Heat go out to Denver to play the Nuggets. The Heat with three losses already. Everybody's getting all worried. Denver, as we've discussed, I like Denver's team. I love George Karl, but they just don't have that guy. I mean, they just don't have that superstar. Now, that's the way George Karl likes it, but again, it's virtually impossible to win an NBA title without a superstar. The Heat, down after three quarters, down three to the Nuggets, come back. I'm sorry. The Heat were up after three quarters. They hold on to beat the Nuggets. Heat 98, Nuggets 93. The Heat are just too tough when they're on. They move to 7-3, and again, they have three losses, and that's like a big deal. But yesterday, LeBron, 27 points, 12 assists, 7 rebounds, 3 blocks. I mean, you know, he's LeBron James. Shane Battier, 6 for 7 from 3. If, again, as we discussed last year during the playoffs, when they have the big three, and Dwayne Wade didn't even play yesterday, but when they have the big three and they get huge three-point production from somebody, again, yesterday Battier, 6 for 7 from three, they're going to be virtually impossible to beat. So LeBron goes 27, 12 assists. Bosch goes 14 points. Battier, 6 threes. And that's all she wrote. Heat 98, Nuggets 93. Now, the Nuggets have Fareed, the animal, the guy who set all the records in college rebounding, not a fluke. Yesterday, 16 points, 20 rebounds. And they have, you know, guys who can play. Iguodala is very good, 10.6 rebounds yesterday. Ty Lawson, a very good point guard, even though yesterday he didn't score. He did have 8 assists. But they've got a nice team, but I'll say it again. And I love Carl. I like the Nuggets team, but they're just not going to be good enough. They dropped to 4-5. Heat 98, Nuggets 93. Another interesting game. The Celtics come into the Barclays Center to play the Nets in Brooklyn. The Nets are a very good team. They have one of the best, if not the best, point guard in Darren Williams. They have a center who can play in Brook Lopez, and now you add the quiet superstar. I love Joe Johnson. And you have Chris Humphries banging at the power forward position. He doesn't need the ball. That's a very good team. And they beat the Celtics down 5 after 3. They come back in the fourth to outscore the Celtics 20-13 and win the game. Nets 94, Celtics 92. Darren Williams, 24 points, 8 assists. Brook Lopez, the center, 24 points, 6 rebounds. Joe Johnson, the silent one, 19 points. I mean, they've got some squad. Humphries, as I said, doesn't need the ball, scores 10 points, but gets 13 rebounds. They got a very nice five. I don't know how deep they are, but they have a very good team. As for the Celtics, no Rajon Rondo, so that would be the explanation if you're a Celtics fan. Pierce has 22.7 rebounds, 4 assists. Barboza, 17 points. Terry starting, 10 points, Jason Terry. KG, 14 points. they're going to be all right, the Celtics, but they do need Rondo. He might be the best point guard in the game. He's certainly the walking triple-double guard. One other thing in the ABA, Mike D'Antoni has had a press conference yesterday. He's out in Los Angeles. He's still on crutches. He had knee replacement surgery, but he coached his first practice on Thursday. And Mike D'Antoni, you know, he's Mike D'Antoni. Shoot, throw it up in 7 seconds, shoot it quickly. He said with the talent, I don't know why he said this, but with the talent we have, we should average 110 to 115 points a game, and that's what I told my team. It's going to take a few weeks to get that into shape, but we'll get that into shape. We're going to have to, you know, win on will the next 2 weeks. That's what he said. And as you know, he was an assistant on the U.S. Olympic team, so he's coached Kobe. He's coached Dwight Howard. Kobe loves him because Kobe grew up in Italy when his father played out there, and Mike D'Antoni was a super-duper star in Italy. In fact, Kobe wore number 8 when he came into the NBA because D'Antoni wore number 8 in Italy. So there's a relationship there. No, it's not Phil Jackson relationship, and I still think it's a mistake not bringing in Jackson. But Kobe's on board, Dwight Howard's on board, and, of course, Steve Nash won back-to-back MVPs with Phoenix running D'Antoni's system. When Phoenix won all those games, they didn't make much noise in the playoffs, but, you know, Nash is thrilled too, although he's still hurt. Bernie Bickerstaff, the interim coach, is still going to coach tonight. D'Antoni's going to start on Sunday against the Rockets, where, you know, Jeremy Lin, who was given a career by Mike D'Antoni, whether, you know, by accident or not, I'm sure Lin will go up and thank D'Antoni for everything he's done, but that will be D'Antoni's first game on Sunday. Quickly now, a few other things. College basketball last night, you know, I mean, it's that time of year. Indiana beat Sam Houston State. Indiana number 1, 99-45. Christian Watford scores 23. Louisville number 2 beat Samford. That's Samford, S-A-M-F-O-R-D, 80-54. Shane Bohannon, 12 points, 18 rebounds. But again, this time of year, you know, Kansas actually playing Chattanooga. Chattanooga was actually up 12 in the second half. Kansas at home, number 7, comes back to win 69-55. McLemore, a very good player, 25 points, 8 rebounds. But usually early on, you know, most people, not all, Duke played Kentucky the other night, most people have a soft schedule. This Saturday, as you know, Alabama has a loss now, so it's not about Alabama. Ohio State is undefeated but ineligible, so it's really about three teams. Kansas State at Baylor. Baylor can put up points. You have to think Kansas State's going to win, but Kansas State at Baylor is not a gimme. Stanford up at Oregon. Oregon, obviously, K-State, Oregon, both 10-0. Stanford ranked 14th, playing up at Oregon in Eugene, and Oregon has the best offense in college football, so you have to keep an eye on those two games. And, of course, Notre Dame third right now to me on the outside looking in. They play a not very good Wake Forest team at home, so Notre Dame should not have problems. Notre Dame's problems, if they have them, will be the following week when they're at USC. That's the game that Notre Dame must lose. Alabama with a gimme playing Western Carolina at home, but Alabama is sitting there hoping two of those three teams lose, and that's possible. That's possible over the remainder of the season. Finally, one more thing, NASCAR. Homestead, Florida, Brad Keselowski leads. If he comes in 15th or better, he wins the chase. I always give you one game on Friday against the spread. I'm taking the Rams. Jets at the Rams. Rams favored by 3. The Rams have a very good defense. I'll say what I usually say when I pick against the Jets. I just don't see how they're going to score. You know, it's Sanchez 52%, 4 red zone interceptions. I don't see how the Jets are going to score. They don't have the dominant defense to do something there as well. So I take the Rams minus 3 in the game I give you every week. Quickly to the TV, interesting stuff. This is stupid, but in Brooklyn tonight at the Barclays Center where the Mets play, where the Nets play, Coaches v. Cancer Classic, Brigham Young at Florida State at 7 Eastern on True TV, Notre Dame against St. Joseph's, 9 o'clock, True TV. At the same time at the Barclays Center, like 6 miles away at Madison Square Garden, they have the 2K Sports Classic, Oregon-Villanova, 5 o'clock ESPN2, Alabama-Purdue, 7 o'clock ESPN2. Look, it's that time of year now. You got a ton of basketball games. college basketball games on TV. The interesting NBA doubleheader, Jazz at 76ers, 7 o'clock ESPN, and even more interesting to me, Knicks at Grizzlies. This could be the Knicks' first loss on their back-to-back, 9:30, also on ESPN. This is Steve Callis on SportsTalkNetwork.com.